Now, in Europe, there's been quite a lot of debate over the structure of science advice. They've gone through one model, and now they're introducing a new model. And it seems to me interesting that nobody on this panel has really been focused on structure. And I would like to just put the question to each of to the panel. I don't know who wants to comment. Does the structure of the interface matter that much, or is it the skill set of the people involved, irrespective of the structure, that determines how effective these capacities of trust, of wisdom, of reaching out to the science community, reaching into the policy community? Because I think that this is an issue that continues to reverberate in many countries about what kind of structure they need, but is it what kind of people they need? Paddy, do you want to comment?
Happy to. One underlying principle that I think affects structure is the open competitive nature of science, both in the acquisition, particularly of public funds, to conduct science. That should be competitive and open to all comers. And in particular, the evaluation then should be open to all challenges. In other words, a requirement of science should be participation in the respectable, by which I mean professionally evaluated and screened in the normal way, publication of results. Because there's, for every dollar spent on science, I presume, there are an equal or perhaps greater amount of dollars spent on special purpose initiatives that can be scientific in some sense, but very often are simply commercial or promotional. So I think the kind of basic integrity of the system is an integral and necessary part of the whole structure, both in the funding, particularly public funds, and in the evaluation of the output.
In New Zealand, just as an aside, but I think it's a relevant comment, Cabinet is now requiring that the science advisory mechanism, which I chair, evaluates all budget bids in the social sector, not just for their evidence base, because that is often still going to be a normative argument rather than empirically based, but most importantly, to be sure that the implementation of the program is set up in such a way that is accessible for impact. And so now my science advisory network is being asked by government to look at, when budgets bids are considered, whether or not it can be evident, the evidence can be collected in such a way that the program itself can be evaluated. This is a major breakthrough in my judgment, that the policymakers are beginning to accept that there's an infinite number of things they might do on normative grounds, but with the limited cash available to all governments, the evidence as to the effect of programs may be important. And again, it's a manifestation that the scientific method is not just valuable in science, but can be an important part of the way governments think about their priority setting as well. Gordon, do you want to comment any more?
Yes, just I think... You were talking about structure versus skill sets, in a sense. I mean, I think we do have to have some flexibility in this, that our traditional structures in academia, our funding councils, quite frankly, in most countries, and our honors societies, of how we get, tend not to support the kind of integrative working across issues, science that needs to be done for many of the policy issues today. That doesn't mean we don't need to have good physics done. I'm a physicist by training. But I also think we need to support those people who are willing and encourage them to, who have the interests and capacity to work across the issues and be supported to do so. So it's a combination of things. Thank you.
Vladimir, do you want to add anything more? Vladimir, do you want to add anything more?
Well, very briefly, I deliberately did not talk about structure because I think that it's not very relevant. And
exactly.
I think that we are in a sort of very initial phase of science to policy interaction. We may say that it's happening for centuries or years, but I think that that would not be probably true. There is a penetration of obviously an interaction between between these two domains, but I think that in a structural way we are just at the very beginning. It is pioneering phase, and I think that we have different countries having different structures, experimenting with different structure. I would not say that that the structure of the Joint Research Center can be repeated somewhere else because it's very unique because of unique construct of European Union, European Commission. But I think that the principles are important, and if we stick to these principles and if we develop those principles, I think that whatever is the structure, I think that we will deliver. And for me, the most important element is this first T, which I mentioned, and it's trust. I think that if we find a way how to build, nurture, and develop the trust, I think this is a prerequisite to everything.
Zachary?
I'd like to comment on structure at two levels. One at the international or global level. We have seen, as we have mentioned, quite a number of processes, namely the IPCC and also the IPBES. These are really flowing into the respective UN convention, one on climate change, the other on biodiversity. But the role of the science advice here would be mobilized through the thousands of scientists who are contributing to the respective assessments. More often than not, these thousands of scientists are doing their work pro bono. We have to look at that, and it is in this context, I think, bodies like the World Academy of Sciences, the Inter-Academy panels, and similar organization should look into how we could structure and fit into that system where the science policy nexus has been well developed. Just responding to the comments about the voluminous nature of this report is not entirely true, because in many of this panel, we have what is called the SPM, Summary for Policymakers, and that's the document that policymakers or politicians would like to look into. At the national level, I think one point is how would science advice navigate itself? Because in the country, science is not only the sometimes the purview of just one ministry. There are many ministries involved. So the how you navigate the multi-ministerial, multi-sectoral, multidisciplinary nature of science is a very challenging one. And more often than not, and this is out of experience, the science advisor to the Prime Minister would sometimes be looked upon with a certain amount of suspicion from colleagues in the different ministries. But the role is as an interlocutor of advice, you know. It is very important. We link up with the academic community in the country. At the end of the day, at least for developing countries, we need to address some of the deficit. I'm talking about the lack of investment in R&D. Just take the Organization of Islamic Conference countries. It is about 57 of the most least developed countries in the world. There's only one or two countries that have invested more than 1% of its GDP on R&D. And this is where science advice has to flow in. Secondly, you talk, Gordon, about this deficit, about capacity building. It is also very true. The number of researchers, scientists, and engineers per 10,000 workers, number of ROC. Normally, in an industrialized country, that number would range from 80 to 120. But for most countries, if you can get 50 per 10,000, is already good enough. So there are many things of urgency that science advice can place itself.
Zeki, thank you. You've raised an important point, and one that I think needs to be brought in mind. One of the roles of the science advisory mechanism, whatever it is, has to work, is that it has to work across the whole government. That, you know, whatever the issue is, it inevitably crosses more than one ministry. And so certainly in my experience, I find that most of my role as the Prime Minister's science advisor is integrating efforts that are going on, say, in the science ministry, the environment ministry, the conservation ministry, the health ministry, into one, to try and identify in particular what the New Zealand's needs in science will be over the next 20 to 25 years, not from an academic point of view, but what governments need to know so that they can move forward. So there's a lot of ways this interaction works. I know that Vladimir wants to make one further comment.
I said that the structures are not that important, but there is actually, when the colleague mentioned IPCC, I realized that there is a structure which is important, and that's the structure, and we don't have, apart from IPCC, we don't have this kind of structures, but we need to invent them. There is one which we introduced and which was mentioned also yesterday as a joint research center, as a European Commission and European Union contribution to Sendai framework. We created the knowledge center for disaster risk management. And I think that these knowledge management structures, which would serve, because not every country can develop the structures for accessing authoritative reliable knowledge. I think that here there is a space for international collaboration between different science advisors or science advice mechanisms to provide the access to authoritative knowledge for everybody. So I think that this is a very important element of knowledge management, which can serve the science to
We're coming
policy.
To